All right. Welcome in, friends. Thank you so much in advance for staying for the entire episode. This is going to be a doozy. Super excited with my brother from another mother, Javier Haas, head of Benzinga Cannabis's news desk, and all news-related items that come out for the Canna and Psych and all these cool emerging markets. Javier leads. He's the best. He's the brightest. We love him. But we are cool. We're not as cool as our three people who are joining us today. Morgan Paxia, as always on Tuesdays, is going to start the day. Kim Ryell from Azuka is going to come and talk about some new tech they're doing. Pumped about that. And then we're going to wrap it up with Roger, the head man over at Puffco. Very excited for this one. This is going to be a sick episode. Javier, this is going to be awesome. But before we let you talk and get into it, Malia, let's go. Let's get going.
Let's go.
Bomb. Malia, I'll always finish it for you. Javi, what's up, my brother? Welcome in to another wonderful episode of Cannabis Insider. How are you?
Doing great. What about you?
I'm good. I'm feeling good. Our event, we will be in Chicago 2 weeks from today. The event is 2 weeks from tomorrow. BZCannabis.com. Elliot20, ELLIOT20. For a 20% off discount code for your tickets. If you're listening to a podcast, you probably already heard an ad about it. But that said, this is the best agenda you'll see, period, in any event in the industry, hands down. Pretty much every major decision maker in the space will be there. I'm very excited for them to just not only enlighten us on what they're doing to grow and to, you know, in some cases, survive over the next 6 to 12 months. But we're also going to hear how this rescheduling recommendation pretty much plays into every single conversation. So, you know, normally I don't do this intense of a plug, but we are 2 weeks out. You'll have, including this episode, 4 more episodes of Cannabis Insider before we dive in. We'll be off that last week, obviously, and you'll be with us in Chicago, Marriott Magnificent Mile. But this is going to be an incredible event. Don't miss it. If you're a part of the cannabis industry or in the cannabis space at all, you should be there. But Javier, anything you want to touch on? I mean, maybe we'll talk about this with Morgan, but Leafly up almost 1,600% thanks to their 1-for-20 reverse stock split.
Yep.
So I looked at that. I was like, man, cannabis stocks are having a day, but this is crazy. That being said,
to be fair, it's just to count for the reverse split, actually.
It is. That's nothing. Listen, just let me live in a win.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me live there. But Javi, what else is on your mind?
We have two great stories on Benzinga.com/cannabis featuring Leafly's own Carlos Pinto. Awesome stories. Go check them out after this show. One of them is building a strong digital presence for your cannabis brand and adapting to different markets. I found that one particularly interesting, written by our own Nico Rodriguez, PhDC.
Hey, I haven't told you yet. So that is in preparation. You're setting the stage for our digital panel in Chicago. Guess who I'm putting on there?
Leafly, Weed Maps, and Mr. Patrick Lane.
Guess who else is going to go on there? The top advertiser on X, Cheech and Chong. We're going to get their head of their beverage and really just their retail in general. Brandon is going to join that panel as well.
Nice.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun conversation in real time. People who care and are prioritizing digital marketing being a part of that conversation. But Javier, what else?
About Twitter X, we also have Twitter X speaking there. We have Alexa Alianello, one of my favorite new
she's
people
so
in
cool.
cannabis. I got to say, she's so dope. And she will also be DJing our after party. How insane is that? Like, that is the most fun thing I've heard. It's like, okay, you got like the keynote speaker. Oh, and by the way, she'll DJ the after party.
You know what I want to know? How did people get into DJ? Like, do you just like, you're like, oh, I'm gonna pick up a board, I'm gonna try it out, we'll see what's going on.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Well, you start with the computer.
Yeah. All right, so Javi, let's not get too deep into our spiel. Love you, we could go on all day, but let's bring in some cool people. The chat, some cannabis happenings with us. Let's start with Morgan Paxia, co-founder of Poseidon Investment Management. What up, Morgan?
Hey, what's up, brother? Hey, gents. How we doing?
We're doing good, man. I feel like we're having a good last 7 days. Is that just me? I feel like it's been a good week and a half for us.
Yeah. Oh, take every moment you get.
Amen. Hey, cannabis stocks are having a good week. You know, my so Luke Jacoby, our president, called me yesterday and was like, hey, why are the stocks moving? And I was like, because they are. is it just a leftover? Are we just seeing the sentiment improve for a little bit before it tanks? Like what's your take on some of this?
Well, today we're definitely seeing a little bit of a give back, right? Mm-hmm. Finally, after just an epic, what was it?
You knew it was coming.
Consecutive days. Knew what? The pullback? Yes.
Yeah.
Obviously did not know that the run was about to happen, otherwise we would not have made the decision we did. But but yes, give back. I mean, when actually that news came out, some of the first things Emily was asking was, where's Kevin Sabin? And sure enough, mm-hmm. It took a week and a half, and here he is. He's gotten some congressional leaders fired up, and I don't know if you saw that with the 14 folks that are pushing back, a mix of Senate and House. You saw the Alabama senators pushing back on Tuberville's support of SAFE. So we're definitely seeing some pushback, and I think it's interesting, and we're not really, but the DEA is supposed to run a process, and now they're being infiltrated with politics. And that's probably giving, all that stuff mixed together, concern about SAFE not happening in the near term, because they have done no work on Section 10, and that seems to still be the issue. And a little bit of pushback on Schedule 3. I think it's just, after an epic run like that, a couple of good headlines like that will burp off some pressure. Now let's see what happens next, and see where the stability happens, and see if we can get some confidence. Otherwise, what's going to happen is a couple of days of this and people start having that PTSD come right back.
Do you really think that SAFE banking has like lesser chances of happening? And this is why I'm asking. I heard from Representative Blumenauer a couple of days ago, and he said, they're working very hard, and he sees SAFE as a possibility, a real possibility. So I don't know, what's your take on this?
I love Blumenauer. He is a forever champion.
Yeah, I don't mean to bet you against him. Yes. Don't worry.
Seeing the news today was not surprising to me at all that, people, I think we're just, unfortunately, people just get really excited about potential federal reform. And if we're not seeing the steps that have caused the stumbling blocks just in June, July this year, then why would we expect anything near term now? And that's why I mentioned Section 10, because I know that certainly has some of the more conservative groups just as a firm no. And so we've got to make progress on that. And it doesn't seem like we have. And so now we're, talking about government shutdown and, issues like that. And this is the challenge we have in cannabis is I know a few senators have said this is a priority, but in aggregate, is it a priority when they're dealing with some of these other issues that are going on? So, I'm still in the low probability camp. I think in my Kiplinger piece last week, I called it minimally optimistic.
That's fair. So what is it, though? What's the theme for these for the opposition? And I ask because, there are a lot of Republicans and surprising ones like a Matt Gaetz, who have been very vocal about their support of rescheduling through the DEA. Obviously, there are ones we know about, Dave Joyce. There's several. I'm blanking on the gentleman from the veteran from Florida, but there's a bunch of examples we could pull. And then today, Green Market Report in Deb's newsletter over there comes out and basically says, more Republicans are more likely to smoke than Democrats. I may be misrepresenting that quote, but it was favorable to Republicans. So I'm just curious, do you see a theme in the opposition of SAFE and of these cannabis federal movements?
I think the general position is it's politics. It has nothing to do with what they actually believe. Generally, it's about politics, and that's the unfortunate part, is because I don't even think they're really reading their constituents right. I mean, you look at the polling data; it doesn't matter. It's bipartisan, has majority support. yet they still feel like they need to take these, you know, these like drug war like positions. Mm-hmm. And so it's not from a point of education. You know, we've been through their offices. They generally are educated about it. It's just whether or not they feel like it's in their best from a re-election position. And that's really just what it comes down to. And where are we? We are going to just be heating up into more and more re-election kind of positioning. And so there's a lot of pieces that go into it, not just from that positioning, but it's also like they look down to the, you know, further into their states and what it might mean for how they vote and how that could impact others in their party getting reelected. So there's, I mean, it's just a giant political machine that's very tough to get things done.
You know, for the last one, let's pivot a little bit to the markets and specific stocks, if you're open. You know, I'm watching this week, like, you know, the big news are Aurora, you know, the Leafly's consolidation and Cresco Labs, you know, seeking to take on Trulieve in Florida. Are any of these catching your eye, or what has been in your radar yesterday and today in the stock market?
So, yeah, it's interesting about Leafly. I did pull up the chart while we were talking about it. So it does. It seems like there's more of a it's just a calculation issue. It's not really actually up, right? And Javier, I know you mentioned that too. So they're trying to stay listed. If you look, Springbig chose not to, right? They went to the OTC. So they were done with trying to support the stock price and meet the listing requirements. Mm-hmm. And they just bailed out and tried to save the money. I wouldn't be surprised if Leafly ultimately does, if their stock price doesn't hold up on the backside of this, because the market cap and the EV are still so, so low. You know, it's got to be a hard financial decision to continue to support it, which is unfortunate. Interesting, you know, that Florida is quite a battleground. Elliot and I were talking about this last week too, right? Where it is just, it's the existing market pre-adult use. I mean, they are fighting over every bit they can get. And so, you know, Trulieve is the incumbent, and there's definitely players that want to challenge that. So it's a competitive game for sure in that state. So, you know, I think there's going to be a lot more headlines coming out of Florida with, you know, there's going to be headlines around store closures, which people try to read negatively. It's really just optimization strategies that'll be going on. These companies, we all have to remember that even if we don't know what next steps are going to be with HHS, DEA, I mean, we have an idea that it could be potentially by this like November 30th date. Let's say that's the best case scenario. Up until that date, 280E still exists. So these companies still have to be very focused on fundamentals and cash flow and you know, thinking about how they're running their businesses. I would expect with the markets, if they can find some footing, you're going to see some companies rushing to raise equity if they can, if there's support for it. Because if they fear mm-hmm. that their stock prices are heading lower, they're going to want to try to lock in some equity raises. And that could also put a lid mm-hmm. on some things. And I'm not trying to sound bearish at all. I'm just saying, like, if I were a CFO of one of these companies, I would.
I'd be expecting it. Like, at this point, I think, listen, I hope I'm wrong. Don't get me. I'm not one of those who's like, you know, I'm doom and gloom. Look at me. I'm amazing. I hope I'm wrong. I think it'll be a miracle if anything's done this year.
Yeah.
But maybe hope I'm wrong. Now it wouldn't be doom and gloom, but I do expect stocks to fall again just due to inaction. I mean, it's almost a given.
The main of the position that something else will happen before SAFE happens, and so that would fall in the rescheduling camp for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the path to it ultimately happening is it's going to be volatile, right? I mean, these stocks don't have institutional support, so when retail gets nervous, they're quick to put in market orders, and boy, these stocks can just, you know. Just like they went up as much as they did, they can go down just as aggressively. It's mm-hmm. you can see it. You know, we're in there. You know, when we're still managing our public positions in the private funds, we see it all the time.
Yeah. Well, Morgan, we got to hop to our next guest here, my friend. But always good to get your insights. Maybe next week we can chat a little bit more about your equity, the hopes of your equity deployment in the future. But I know right now it's tight in the space.
Yeah, and then I'll be getting on a plane and seeing you guys in person.
So excited. It's going to be a great two days in Chicago, man. But can't wait for it. We'll talk to you again next week, my friend.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Morgan. All right. Our weekly episode with Poseidon. Love Morgan and his insights. Really, really great to have him with us.
Yeah, man. I love it. I love it. And honestly, I would choose having him speak versus me doing the news every day. Just like the wealth of knowledge he brings. Honestly, he knows the industry.
Well, he's so in it. I mean, talk about somebody who's in it.
Dan's investing. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. He's in it. So with that said, we're going to keep it moving. Next up, please bring over Kim Riel of Azuka. Y'all know him and love him. I was going to give you my singing intro if we didn't get the video soon. Kim, how are you?
I'm doing great, Elliot. Good to see you guys.
Good to see you too. Listen, technical difficulties don't bother us. We'll be our transition music.
Live streaming.
But Kim, so excited to have you on. You've been on a while ago, so it's really nice to revisit Azuka. Can you just give us a quick 30-second reminder, a little bit about what Azuka does?
Sure. Azuka is an innovation company, and we develop advanced formulations around the cannabis plant for ingestible and topical cannabis. And then we license those formulations to brands and manufacturers to make their edibles and topicals the very best they can be. So think of it as the Intel Inside model, like the secret ingredient that really enables brands and manufacturers to take their brand to the next level.
And you've been growing while you know, most or many in the industry are struggling, right? I saw your news a few weeks ago about being included in the Inc. 5000 list of the fastest growing companies in America. How are you doing it?
Well, I got to say, it's the intersection of innovation and team, right? We really have the industry leading innovations around the plant for edibles, beverages, and topicals. And I'll stand by that statement all day and all night. Want to share one of our newest one with you a little bit more in this broadcast. So it's we're innovators at our core, and we are passionate about bringing innovation around the plant to every brand, every manufacturer on the planet. And we've built a really incredible team to execute that strategy. And I can't say enough about the Azuka team. They are wonderful humans. Helpfulness is our number one core value as a company. And we really are very intentional and deliberate about being helpful to our partners, to each other, to our ecosystem. So that's how we do it. We work really, really, really hard.
I love that. And honestly, you have to in this space. Because there is some good competition, I would imagine, in what you do. But you just continue to innovate. You continue to put out new ways to help companies be more efficient. Now let's dive in to the tech.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about this latest innovation that you all have released.
Sure. So our core and what I sort of consider table stakes in the industry now, when we first launched back in 2018, was making cannabis fast acting and great tasting. And that's our roots. That's where we began. And everything we do includes fast acting and great tasting, ease of manufacturability, saving on manufacturing waste for manufacturers. So those things are all just part of our platform. But what we released this year, which I am so excited about, is an innovation called Whole Plant Activator. And it's a little bit of a mind-blowing innovation. It still blows my mind, and I'm so excited about it. But Whole Plant Activator is a process that allows manufacturers to use whole plant. I'll do a little demo. Like, let's say this is cannabis flower, right? It's a little piece of jade because I didn't have any flower on my desk. But this process literally uses flower, so it enables edibles and beverages without extracts. You take that and you mix that with Azuka Activator, which is a non-infused precursor ingredient. So this is really our intellectual property, our secret sauce. Take your flower, Azuka Whole Plant Activator, and you create an infusion. So there is no extraction process, literally. And with that process, I know, mind blowing. It's incredible. And so that that infusion then becomes the ingredient for your edible, your syrup, and it does a number of things. So in that process, we've done what we do with all of our process, right? It's an encapsulation process. So the active cannabinoids have been now encapsulated in the time infusion technology, which is a hydrophilic water-seeking encapsulation, which is what enables the fast uptake and the Delta 9 smoker's high experience in an edible form, right? So that's that's the core. But what this process has done is it preserves the terpenes and flavonoids, essentially the full, the term is inflorescence of the plant. All the good stuff in the flower goes into your edible. And you can take that infusion and put it literally straight into, this is a gummy that is made with that slurry. This is strain specific. This is this one happens to be lemon baton, 5 milligrams. But there is no other. There's no flavoring. There's no coloring. There's nothing but the plant, and it's delicious. So what it enables, for the first time ever, like, and I'm not a smoker, right? I never have been. But for the first time ever, it gives non-smokers a way to fully enjoy the strain specific taste and sensory benefits of the cannabis plant in its natural state. It's as close to the plant as you can get in an ingestible form. So it does, it is a little mind blowing. They are delicious. And each strain, like in a gummy form, for example, one of the first sample batches we made, when I tasted it, I couldn't believe that there wasn't pineapple flavor added to it, because it literally, it was, it was all the natural terpene and flavonoid profile of the flower. So it's really a game changer. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like it in the industry. The sensory effects are incredible, close to the plant. And it, as I said, it really creates a whole nother opportunity for non-smokers to experience the cannabis plant in its wealth and wonder.
So if I may, a follow-up question here for the business side of this, what does this do for companies? You know, is it create more efficiency? Is it quicker product? Is it cheaper? You know, obviously the consumer I get, but for companies, what's the benefit?
So think of it this way. You are able to now make edibles without having the cost of the extraction process. Right. So in some analysis, you know, some analysis that we did recently, you can save up to 70% on the cost of the ingredient that goes into your gummy or your edible, right? Because you haven't gone through an extraction process that is capital intensive and sometimes labor intensive, depending on what the process is. And it's also very, very clean. It is true to the plant. So that's one business impact, right? Is cost savings. The other thing that I think is really interesting is this process enables manufacturers at any scale. So the large manufacturers, it is accessible to, but it also is accessible to a craft grower, right? And one of the things that I'm excited about is this whole plant activator process is an innovation that will allow the craft grower segment of the market to create edibles and beverages, kind of mimicking, I think like mimicking the craft beer model, right? Because it puts the power right directly into a flower grower's hands to, with, you know, again, without the expense and the complications of traditional extraction, to then convert some of their incredible flower directly into, you know, an ingestible form in addition to a smokable form. Yeah. So there's a social equity aspect of that, right? Because the small growers now can have direct access to a process, again, to open up more markets for them with their cultivation expertise and with their genetics. So I love this process. I think it's a game changer for the industry.
Cool.
And, mm-hmm. you know, it is a little mind blowing, right? You know, it's hard to get your head around, but that's how it works.
I need to understand how that works though. Like not the science of it all, because I know that's complex, but like what is the activator? How do you get a bud and like, do you grind it? What's the, like, you know, the process like in terms of like steps?
Yeah, so there's you know, with the flower, you will grind it, and before you mix it into the activator, there is a set of you know, proprietary steps in that process around temperature and mixing and things like that. That is part of our intellectual property, but it is literally that simple.
Insane.
That's really cool. So one question from the chat and then one quick fun one from me. Heath Koresh, does that process make the extraction a water soluble or a fat soluble?
So all of our processes are water. We use the term water friendly because none of it's technically water soluble. That's a, you know, that's a chemistry argument. But yes, these are water miscible. You could put them in a beverage. They'll suspend in water. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Now, last one from me, Kim. Mm-hmm. You just climbed a mountain.
I did.
Where'd you go? What'd you climb? Did you reach the top? You got to tell us about it.
I did. I just got back from climbing Mount Kilimanjaro in Africa. So the highest mountain in Africa. Bucket list. It's been on my bucket list for about 20 years, and I finally got on a plane and climbed that mountain. And it was an epic, you know, once in a lifetime experience. Yes, I made it to the top with my Zika hat on.
Oh, you're way more in shape than me. I probably get halfway up and be like, where's the coffee shop? Kim, thank you so much for being with us. Your new tech
Thanks
is
for
incredibly
having me.
Cool. Excited to keep up with your innovation. You're a leader in the space. Thank you for your time. And hopefully we'll see you again very soon.
Absolutely. Great to see you guys.
Thanks, Kim. All right, Javi. That was fun, man. but that was fun. Kim can interview the next guest with us too if she wants. But all that said,
no, let's keep it clipping from non-extracts to the number one lover of concentrates and extracts I have ever met in my life. I have not met a person who is more passionate about hash than Mr. Roger from Puffco. Let's bring him on.
Let's do it. Not gonna lie. Oh, maybe.
Just had it.
Javier, what an intro, man. It's good to see you again. What an intro, my guy.
Oh, man, if there's someone who loves his hash, if there's someone who loves his concentrates, his extracts, that is you and that is Chelsea. I have never ever seen anyone more obsessed with this. Tell us your story. How do you become like, how does this become like your lifeblood to a certain extent?
Sure. I'll keep it as short as I can. Hi, by the way. Nice to meet you. I'm a New Yorker, and quite simply, my story with concentrates starts with Discretion 2012. What we called at the time wax pens hit the scene. We're able to, you know, go around New York City and consume without the fear of being arrested, which I have been a few times at this point. And so I started using concentrates just because they were easy to get away with in New York. Over time, what I found was that hash gave me a very different high. Concentrates gave me a very different high than flower would. It would be something that would come on quicker. It would not make me dumb. Like, I could still hold a conversation. I could be interested in stuff and engaged. And then I also found that it went away really easily. So once it was gone, I was done being high. I wasn't burned out for the rest of the day. And so it started as a chase for convenience, then turned for a chase of getting a high that fit into my life better. And then as the industry grew in general, it became more about flavor as well and all the nuance associated with concentrates. So starting a journey simply because as a New Yorker, it made me feel safer. And where we're at with the journey now is we feel that this is one of the best, if not the best experience in the space for all the reasons I just listed. That's kind of been my very short story of how I went from somebody who didn't really use hash to somebody who almost exclusively consumes hash.
So Puffco, you are known for I mean, your complementary products to consumption, I would say. Tell us a little bit about, you know, how you develop these products. I'd love to hear about your process. About, are you listening to consumers? Are you just innovating because, you know, you dream up something? I'd love to hear your process on how you create some of these products.
Sure. So both. So, I mean, one, you know, I have to give all credit to my team. You know, I think I'm a decent idea guy. And I think everybody has ideas and not many of them ever get made. So I really have to give credit to our brilliant product team. That's like upwards of 20 people these days. You know, really, I come from the community. If you're in the space, you'll notice me at hash competitions. You'll see me at random cannabis events, getting high with people and consuming. And so I'm typically there with our community where they gather. Also, we're putting on arguably the biggest, I have to plug this, our biggest hash event in the space, PuffCon. This is coming up in just 2 weeks where all the community shows out. But quite simply, we make products for ourselves. That's what we've been doing this whole time. Our first journey into this space started with, you know, using these wax pens that I described in the early days. We noticed that they were melting. They had plastic on the inside. They would completely fall apart. Mm-hmm. And so we just wanted to make something that wouldn't melt and would work a little bit better. And we came out with our original PuffGo Pro. This was a vape pen. It had a larger capacity chamber than anything that existed in the market at the time. It was using ceramic for wicking instead of fiberglass. It had temperature control. And so we just wanted to make something that was better for us. And that journey continued. When we made the Peak, I made it because my New York friends wouldn't dab. If you pulled out a torch and started, you know, heating the nail in front of them, they'd be like, dude, are we doing some crack type stuff here? This is weird. I don't like it. And that was the major inspiration behind the PuffGo Peak, which kind of changed the scope of our company and gave us all the success that we have today. All of it came because we are a part of the community, and the products that we make are products to make our own experience better. And it happens to be that if we make our own experience better, seems like it's serving a bunch of other people. But that's really where it begins. We love hash. We love consuming it. We use our PuffGo products second only to our computers or our phones every day. Can so I- when we innovate, yeah, we're innovating in our own favor.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Roger.
That's okay.
I just want to ask a quick follow-up. You know, I was on LinkedIn recently, and honestly, seen a few posts recently about cannabis culture. And what is it? You bring community up a couple times, right? And we understand community. You know, we understand like who's participating in the space. But what does cannabis culture mean to you? You know, what is that?
I mean, I think it means a different thing to different people. I can focus on it from two angles. There's, for most people, some people in California don't really have this, but for most people, we are binded by oppression. Not the worst oppression the United States has to offer. That's reserved for, it seems like, some other groups. But we are bound by oppression. It doesn't matter where you go in the world. If you find a cannabis user, you find somebody that's had to learn how to be discreet, how to hide what they do, are potentially embarrassed in front of their friends and family. This shared trauma that we all experience means that when you find somebody anywhere else in the world who uses cannabis, you have more in common than you would think, even if you have nothing in common. That plant and your love for it has led you to experiences that you now understand each other better than most strangers would. On the other side of it is obsession. A lot of cannabis users, especially within our hash concentrate community, they are obsessed with the evolution of cannabis, whether it be from the hardware consumption side or the actual plant side and how it changes. And that's why in hash specifically, you've seen going back a decade, every single year, there's a new extraction method, there's a new consistency, there's something new that sweeps up the space and excites everyone. And so for me, those are the two areas of cannabis community that I would define. I think everyone has a different one, but it's bound by trauma and bound by obsession. It's those two, and I think they typically converge really well. That's what it is to me. I think some other people be like, yeah, man, it's all about chilling and just hanging out. Like, it's that too, but I don't think that's the connective tissue that keeps us all here.
What a great answer. Thank you.
A lot, and you know, I can attest to that, right? You know, I know that people were saying, okay, like, you know, the Peak is great, but it's not discreet enough. We need something that is portable, and you came out with a proxy. And then they were like, well, you know what, but I want a lot more smoke because, you know, I used to use this torch and I would get like a big cloud, and this electronic device is great. It's discreet, it's comfortable, but it doesn't give me the cloud I'm looking for. And you came out with a new peak, et cetera, et cetera. You know, but yeah. But my question is, why such a big focus on global markets, right? Because what I see is you don't only get the feedback from America, right? Most companies do like focus groups and polls and whatever, but they inform their product just by what America wants versus what the cannabis community at large wants, right?
Yeah, this is a tough question, especially for this audience. Mm-hmm. Because my answer is not conventional. I mean, I can give you the businessy answer. I'll go with that first because that probably speaks to your audience more. You know, everywhere you go in the world, cannabis is being consumed. And right now it's seen as a tax revenue vehicle for a lot of governments. They're looking at cannabis as an opportunity to have more funding for what they're trying to achieve. What that means is you go across the world, you're meeting people that are a little bit more out of the shadows than they were, let's say, 5 or 10 years ago. And we're seeing that in markets like Germany, that is going to be very likely the first European country to go recreational or anything even close to it. We know that that will have the, we know that will have the dominoes falling in Europe. When we look at Latin America, my God, the passion there that I have seen, the love for the plant, the quality of what they're doing against all odds, not just against not having access to the genetics we have and the infrastructure that we have here, but they're in a completely different world that is highly criminalized, and they're still continuing to make some of the dopest fire hash that I've seen. Now, on the business sense for us, if you look at the example of what Pepsi has done, Pepsi is a company that isn't number one in many markets, but as you start going to some markets, you'll notice they are number one. When you go to Colombia, you'll notice a strange amount of Pepsi in restaurants and in people's stores. When you go to Jamaica, you'll notice Pepsi is doing really well. I believe the reason for this is they invested in markets that weren't necessarily worth it to the person or the company doing the most amount of work, and they were able to establish success for themselves there. So as Puffco competes with itself, we want to make sure we're in all these markets. Now, that's the business answer that I'm going to give people. We're investing early. When they finally pop off, Puffco will be there with them growing. The real reason, I love hash. I love this community. Going across the world, going into Spain, and meeting somebody who's made a type of concentrate that I've never seen in my life, and then going and consuming it with them and eating some of the best food I've ever eaten, or being in Colombia and seeing natural beauty unlike I've ever seen, being in an environment that's 96 degrees Fahrenheit, and seeing people still come through with some
You're
of the best
You're talking about Sativa, right?
Yeah, it's you know, you're there and you're like, how have these people made such incredible product against all odds? They're far away from the States. It is an extremely hot environment that isn't conducive to making hash, but these people and their product persevere. So like, the reason I do it is it's an early investment in what will eventually be a global market. That's the businessy case I would tell my CFO. Why do I love to do it? Is because I love these people and I love what I get to see and experience every time I'm in front of them.
The double bottom line, famous, and I love it. But, and here's one more. You were talking about innovation, constantly evolving formats and presentations and ways to process cannabis and how people become obsessed with it, right? At the same time. So what is your obsession? What is Jolly Roger's 2023 obsession in cannabis?
So, you know, in our what feels like a niche space but isn't as niche these days, it seems to be something called Pietella. This is something I tried for the first time in 2022 in Barcelona. I went back in 2023 with the intention of creating a video and saying, this is the best hash in the world. It's the craziest thing I've tried. Since I made that video, it seems to have taken off everywhere. There's a lot of people trying to figure out how to make it, when it's really a very small community that understands it in Barcelona. It is my current favorite thing going. I think it's the newest thing going. So Pietella, if you haven't heard of it, you could search it on YouTube, 2 T's, 2 L's, and a little video I made up will come up that'll give you some more context. But Pietella seems to be the, I don't know, the trendy of the year for sure.
You know, last question for me, and then I'll let Javi wrap up. What's your thought on the industry as it pertains to DC, as it pertains to rescheduling, as it pertains to safe banking. The vote's not going to happen this week. We just got the news from the Senate Banking Committee. But are you of the mindset that incremental is fine? Do you want deschedule or nothing? You know, just getting leaders like yourself to weigh in on this, I think, is very important for the growth and future of this industry.
Yeah, our general counsel handles a lot of our lobbying and most of these conversations. Safe Banking Act has personally affected me. I own a company that is not cannabis touching. We don't have a single grow. We don't extract anything. And a couple of years ago, I was buying a home. And right after I got approved for the mortgage and purchased the home, Chase shut down all of my accounts. After 10 years of being with Chase, maybe 12 years, the entirety of this business I've been with them. As soon as I applied for a mortgage, they're like, well, what do you do? And I said what I do. They ripped everything away from me. And since then, I've gone to Citibank and others. And sure enough, and I don't want to say the bank I'm with because it seems like they're being chill and I don't want to aggravate them. Man. But every 60 days, I would get shut down with whoever I tried until I found a really good banking partner. As far as what's going on in DC, I think the biggest problem is that, we're in a highly divisive political atmosphere here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And cannabis is something, facts, is not harming anyone, right? There's no, it can't kill you. It can't do what alcohol can do. It's not addictive like tobacco is, but it's become this identity politics. I believe what my view of the world is should be imposed on others. It feels like there's a big authoritarian energy as we talk about this future of cannabis in almost every single angle. What sucks for me is I'd probably be more okay with the perspectives that I disagree with if there were people that were informed about the plant. And much like what you have with technology, right? Like when you have social media and you have these Congress people asking somebody, what's a Finsta? Is that Russia? Like, it's that same energy of you guys mm-hmm. don't understand what you're regulating. And you're not owning that ignorance. You're not saying, hey, guys, we actually don't understand cannabis at all. It looks like it's not as harmful as we thought. Let's make a committee of people that understand what this is, that has scientists and doctors, that don't care about identity politics. They're just here to make sure people are not harmed by this and that we don't create a market that will hurt itself as we regulate it. But that doesn't seem to be the case. It seems to be business as usual in America. We're going to use this to outrage people, to get them to vote for what they mm-hmm. believe in. And ultimately, there's been no action. Kamala was talking a big game. Joe Biden was talking a big game. I think Trump at a certain point was talking a big game. There's nothing that comes from it. They just use it mm-hmm. to get their votes. They use it to fearmonger. And then they leave us to deal with whatever happens without their involvement. So Yep. Huffco is very involved. We do lobby. We do take some action. We're really against high potency caps that seem to really negatively impact veterans when you can only consume so much cannabis. There's no matter how high the potency is, your body can only take so much, unlike mm-hmm. alcohol, yeah. which you could kill yourself by drinking too much of. So there's a lot of things going on that we are involved in. My hope for the future is that honestly, people from our community get involved in politics. It's something that I try to tell my friends often of, if you hate what's going on, if you hate what's going on in California, what are you going to do about it? You seem to be informed. You seem to know what regulation should be. Are you going to run? Are you going to try to work with them? What are you going to do? Man, they never want somebody like me. Well, then you're just conceding that their perspective will be the one that wins.
Yeah.
Mm. So if you're listening to this and you hate what they're saying, and you have the bandwidth or the will to get involved in politics in some way, we need representation. And it doesn't happen by compelling ignorant politicians. It happens by putting mm-hmm. our people into the government. So I hope there's more of that in the future.
Amen.
Yeah.
To close it up and looking toward the future, give us a taste of the future for Puffco. What's up in the horizon?
So two things. One, I mean, we do have PuffCon coming on. We have two chains. We have Action Bronson.
September 30 after Benzinga conference. So you can make it to both.
It's a really dope event. You have to have a PuffCo device to get in, but we're doing plus ones nice. This year, which is the first time we've ever done that to just allow new people to experience our community. It's one of the most exciting things we do. It's like $20 to get in. So it's really, we've done it for free the past 2 years. This is the first year we're trying to make some of our money back. The other thing is Puffco is constantly evolving and constantly innovating. And if you're somebody, like I mentioned before, where the community comes from either obsession or trauma, if you're in this community for obsession, I think you will be rewarded no bigger by following somebody than Puffco. Always something new. There's always a new product. There's always a new initiative. There's always new stuff that we're learning and relating to the community. So if you love new and you love evolution, just watch us and see what we do in this space. And hopefully you'll enjoy some of the products we make.
Amen.
That's what's up.
That's what's up. Roger, really appreciate your time today, man. Very insightful answers. It's been a great interview. Looking forward to having you on again. Hopefully we'll get you to our April 15th through 17th Cannabis Capital Conference in 2024. But really love what you're doing, man, and wish our dates didn't conflict. I'd buy a ticket in a heartbeat.
Likewise, guys. Yeah, thank you for having me on. Very nice to meet you, Elliot. You're always a pleasure, my guy. You're also internationally known, my friend. Everywhere I'm at, you've already walked that path. So I'm just following. I'm riding your coattails these days.
Come on, guys. Thanks, Roger. Appreciate you, man.
Appreciate it. Later.
Oh, man.
He ain't wrong, though.
One time.
Javier, you're the man. Best damn journalist in the cannabis space. I'm trying to point to you. It's hard.
Not really. You'll find out who we think and who our judges think are the best cannabis journalists.
Yeah, but you can't be nominated.
At the Benzinga Cannabis Capital Awards, whatever they're called. The Benzinga Cannabis Awards, September 27 and 28 at the Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference in Chicago, will be announcing the winners. Who will get the accolade of being the journalist of the year, the best business journalist of the year, the best lifestyle journalist of the year? bzcannabis.com. Come join us.
You guys, I'll say this and then we're going to hop off. Network with each other in our chat. LinkedIn and YouTube is always the most active chats. We get somebody from Twitter every now and then, or X, apologies, excerpts from X. But you know, Heath Koresh does this. I respect it and I want it to happen. Let us know what you do. Let us know how we can feature you. You can also email us at cannabishour@benzinga.com. But as always, Javier, you're the man. Malia, producer Malia, thank you for standing in for producer AT today. You're the best. Appreciate you all. We'll be back again Thursday with some more awesome guests. Until then, make it a great week. Make it a great one and buy tickets to our Cannabis Capital Conference. Peace.